Welcome back in. I'm Adrian Wojnarowski, host of the Vertical Podcast with Woj. And I think you're going to like this one a lot. 12-time NBA All-Star and 3-time NBA champion, Dwayne Wade of the Chicago Bulls. D. Wade was reflective, nostalgic, insightful. He was funny. This was the best of D. Wade. We talked about the big three in Miami, LeBron James, Chris Bosh. Talked a lot about his relationship and his frustration with how that relationship with Pat Riley ended in Miami, his great respect and admiration for Heat coach Eric Spoelstra, and about his future in Chicago, living in Chicago now, coming back home, raising his kids in his hometown, closer to family, and trying to navigate a fairly dysfunctional situation so far with the Bulls. We talked about everything. So let's get to it. Here's future Hall of Famer, Dwayne Wade. Here with Dwayne Wade in Minneapolis, we got a great view.
Great view
of the roof of the Target Center, the baseball stadium.
Phenomenal.
How many nights of your life, Dwayne, you've spent just staring out hotel windows all around the country, the world?
You know, it could be like a lonely... It could be lonely, you know, like at times you're just in your room and, you know, you're just sitting there with your thoughts and, you know, I have a lot of them and it can be a lonely feeling sometimes. And then sometimes you can think about it and you can be like, man, it's just amazing that I get to travel the world, that I get to go places, experience, you know, different people, different, cities, different countries. So it's pretty cool.
You know, I'm sure you were like this when you were a kid. Like the first trip you got to make where you got to stay in a hotel, like as a basketball player, probably maybe a camp or traveling AAU team.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I was like a young sports writer, like that I could go overnight, stay in a hotel, like write my story, come back. It was the biggest deal in the world.
Yeah.
But it was right when you were a kid though.
I remember, so I only played 1 year of AAU basketball and it was my, my junior year. And that was the first time I got on a plane. And I get on a plane and we get to the hotel room and you just walk in and like you got roommates on it and you just jump on the bed, trying to look in the mini bar, like whatever you can. Like we were so excited. And I played with the Illinois Warriors, which was Larry Butler's team. And I had Darius Miles on my team. We was real good friends and we were roomed together. And this, everybody would come in our room. People would sleep on the floor or whatever just to be, you know, together. But just to be in the hotel together, man, was just so cool.
Darius, I mean, heartbreaking. Yeah. I know you saw the story. He just had a bankruptcy hearing where people were, you know, they're just selling off his belongings in St. Louis a few months ago. And I mean, I remember when the Nets had that first overall pick in, I guess, 2001, you know, they were choosing between Kenyon Martin and Darius Miles.
Yeah.
It's got to remind you though, that the thin line between who makes it and who doesn't and why. You look back and you think of guys that you looked at, I'm sure, and said, geez, I think he's better than I am, but then they don't. But it's kind of interesting to look back and because there's so many variables as to why somebody makes it and somebody doesn't. And you two may have come from very similar backgrounds. You both had a lot of stuff in your life that you had to overcome. I imagine when you get into your mid-30s now, you must think about that because you see guys kind of fall by the wayside.
Man, no doubt. It's like... I mean, you do ask, you know, kind of the why, like, why me, you know, and it's a good why. But you do kind of think about that. You know, I never was the tallest, you know, I never can shoot the best. I never can jump the highest. I never did nothing better than, you know, everybody growing up. But I guess it was just something that I had that just allowed me to stick and a little luck. But I went through injuries. I went through all the things that could derail you. You know, all the lawsuits, divorces, everything that can derail you, I think I hit him. I went straight through it with the plane. And for some reason, just, you know, the man above would not let me fall. And, you know, I'm very thankful for that. I'm very thankful to have a strong mind, but more so than anything, have a great support system around me. I think that is huge to have people around you that really care about you and don't just care about what they can get from you. You know, everyone gets something, of being around each other. We all do. But, you know, I think I've been lucky to have good people around me, you know, like coming out, not knowing what agent to get. I mean, I got a great agent, you know, Henry Thomas was a great agent for me, and it just started building from there. So I was lucky having Coach Crean in my life, my college coach. I was lucky having somebody who really cared about me, away from basketball. So I just been lucky from that standpoint, but it is a fine line and it can happen, you know, to anybody.
Dwayne, when you thought about how this year would go in Chicago, that at some point the novelty, the newness of being home would wear off, and you're playing for a team, you're playing for an organization, and it's great to be back, but you're sort of left with, okay, this is what it is. Mm-hmm. Did you imagine this thing going better? Did you think it would be as much of a struggle as it has for the team? What were your expectations of this whole thing?
Well, I didn't really have a lot of expectations because I didn't know, really the guys on the team. You know, I played against a few of them, but I knew they was young. So I needed to get into training camp. I needed to be around them before I got, you know, my expectations. I said that at my press conference, you know, there's no expectations on this team yet until we get into it. And once I got into it, I realized that, you know what, obviously we have, you know, myself and Rondo, who's been there, who's won a championship. And then we have Jimmy, who, you know, is now made himself a, you know, an all-star in this league. But outside of that, it's a lot of guys that doesn't have any experience. This ain't even playoff experience. This is just basketball experience. Taj has some, you know, Robert has some, but a lot of other guys we count on. So for me, I knew it was going to take a while. And you just hope to hit a stride at some point. That's your goal. When you're with a new team and everything got to come together, you hope, one, that you can stay healthy. And you hope, two, that you guys figure out your game. You figure out what it takes you guys to win. And y'all can finally hit that stride at some point throughout the year. And, you know, it's still time. You hope you can still do it. But, you know, time does tick away on you, too. And I've been on teams where it's ticked out. The clock ticked out on us.
13 years in Miami, at what point this year, or have you even gotten there yet, where you wake up in the morning or you wake up in a hotel room and you're like, oh yeah, I play for the Bulls, I'm not playing for the Heat. How long did that?
I think it's still there. Like, it's times where my mind, if I look at the schedule and I see the Heat playing someone, I automatically think like, if I say Heat versus Denver, I'm like, dang, we got Denver. You know, it's in my mind. I mean, 13 years and it's not even just me. It's people around me. People like, hey man, you coming to the city? I'm like, no, that's probably the Heat. The Bulls are somewhere else. So, you know, it's still that way. I remember I just asked my son recently, I'm like, hey, I was trying to tell him to go in the room and grab my Bulls shorts for me. But what I said is, hey, go grab my Heat shorts. And he was like, what? I'm like, go grab my Heat shorts. So, you know, it takes time to get rid of, you know, that for me. I've been obviously, you know, with one organization my whole career and then moving to the Bulls and just trying to get used to early on. It was just trying to get used to saying the right language. And, but now it's still there. You know, I still look at the schedule and sometimes I think we're playing Philly, you know, but no, we're playing Minnesota. So sometimes it happens that way still.
Did you watch any of the Tim Duncan jersey retirement ceremony that they had?
That was the whole thing. Yeah.
What did you think watching that?
Well, first of all, I love the fact that it was after the game because it gave him more time. And I think that, you know, that 15, 20 minutes, whatever they get at halftime, I never think that's enough, especially for, you know, these are great players, you know, that get their jersey retired. This is their moment. You want to let them enjoy it. So I was glad that they did that. But I thought it was Tim Duncan, you know. He got up there. Tim, I played with him in Olympics in 2004. He's a funny guy. A lot of people don't know it because he's quiet, but he got up there. He cracked a couple jokes. He thanked everybody, you know, because Tim, he knows that he didn't do none of this by himself. And it was simple, but just the love that you've seen from all the fans, from all his teammates. I mean, that's what it's about, you know.
I sent that video to some college coaches I'm friends with, some high school coaches, and said, if I was a coach, I'd want to show that to my team and say to your best player, your elite, this is what your teammates should think about you. This is how they should look at you. It was, I mean, you said it, the, you know, Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker and obviously Pop, and just how heartfelt it was. Like, boy, it's hard to recreate what they've had there. Yeah. And what Tim, it's, was there part of you looking at it going, am I missing out on that? Should I have, you always, I'm not saying you regret, but you look back and go, was that important enough that I should have thought about that night? Like, what did it get you nostalgic for Miami? No,
it didn't. And I think because, I mean, I was there when Alonzo came back, and I was there when Alonzo got his jersey retired, and the love and, you know, admiration for him and what he did was there. You know, it's just, I didn't worry about it. I know one day my jersey will be retired in Miami. I know one day I will have that ceremony, that moment. And I think, you know, I think what I accomplished in those 13 years is just going to be, it's going to be there no matter what.
The one team thing. In the end, you're going to be remembered.
Yeah.
As the player in Miami Heat history, and nothing changes that. Whatever's left in your career here, it doesn't change.
Yeah. No, it doesn't change. And I, you know, and I said multiple times, I did, you know, I thought it was cool to be, you know, one of those guys that could play with one organization, you know, for their whole career. It's very rare. And you, who doesn't want to be rare? You know, but, it didn't work out that way for me. And to me, you know, it doesn't take anything away from my journey. You know, everyone has their own path. Everyone has their own journey and everything happens for a reason. You know, and I, like I said, I look back at those 13 years and I smile. You know, it's like, it's hard to reflect while you're in it. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm out of those 13 years with the organization, I look back and people, I don't know, I think people think that I want the Heat to do bad. You know, people probably think that, you know, like, oh, he still followed the Heat. Yes, I followed the Heat. I watched all their games. I'm checking up on them because at the end of the day, it's always going to be a part of me. You know, that organization always going to be, it's always going to be my organization in some form, some way because of what I was able to accomplish there and where my career stands, you know. So, I want nothing but success for them. It's just that at this time for me, you know, the best thing for me to do was to remove myself and vice versa for them. They had to make a decision too as an organization. So, you know, I think I understand the business side of things and it's ugly and it gets in the way and, you know, and things that matter. But at the end of the day, it's nothing but love for me.
You played Miami fairly recently.
Yeah.
Have you gotten a chance to visit at all with Eric Spoelstra since you left? I know you and Pat have not really been able to do that. Has it been different with Spo?
Yeah. It's been different with Spo. The last time we played, for the third time, after the game, you know, we kind of had a moment where we just sat and talked. It wasn't prompt. It just happened. And, you know, I was really telling him, and this was, you know, I think it was at 5-game streak at that time. And I was really telling him how proud I was of him as a coach, from what I've seen from afar, but what I know that he does and what the organization do from standpoint of the players and really holding them accountable. You know, I can, and really making them, no matter what they all always said, you guys play so hard. No matter what their record was, they played so hard. And I just really, I know it comes from him. It comes from his assistant coaches. It comes from that culture that was built. And I just gave him praises for it. And I don't think he expected it from me at that time. But, you know, me and him have gotten a better relationship. I thought last year our relationship was probably at the highest it's ever been. And, you know, it doesn't change. We still text each other. You know, there's times where he sends me pictures of him and the staff and, you know, my guys, you know, so. That's always going to be there, you know, and none of that stuff could be erased because you change your zip code or your area code. Not for me. So, you know, he's somebody who, you know, has been in my corner and I've been in his corner. We linked together forever. So,
yeah. I'm not sure people appreciate how good he is.
They don't. And I think now they will because he doesn't have the quote unquote star name players on the team and what they're accomplishing now. Is remarkable.
It's as impressive of a winning streak as I've ever seen in the league. They won their 12th straight the other night. Three of the five starters were Wayne Ellington, Luke Babbitt, and Rodney Magruder.
Yeah.
And no offense to those guys.
Yeah,
but
no.
That's hard to do.
They have AD league former players on their roster. And, you know, this the NBA. Like this any given night, anybody could beat anybody. And they're, you know, and they're doing an amazing job of running the table, winning games multiple ways. And one thing I did notice, I talked to you, DLI, who was one of my best friends, and I told him early in the season, I said, you know, you guys have the toughest schedule. You know, I remember early in the season, they played San Antonio twice. I'm like, that is tough. So they had a tough schedule early and, you know, to be able to keep those guys, those young guys to stick with it and keep believing in themselves is a testament in itself. So I think this streak right now they own is just as impressive as the streak we had. We won 27 games. You know, we did it with Chris Bosh, LeBron James, Ray Allen, like, you know, and this streak right here is to me is just as impressive, you know, with guys' names that's not as big as we sit here today.
You only knew the Miami Heat. I mean, that's what you knew as a pro. And people talk about culture and it's a cliche people throw around. We're going to change the culture, but very few places is there a real culture. And to me, I just, and we were talking about this before we came on, just that, that winning streak to me symbolizes what an organization, what it means to be a big time organization from the top to the bottom, that when you're 11-30, you don't let the season just turn into 15-42. You grab back hold of it because the standards there, right, they don't change.
Yeah, the standards don't change no matter who comes in and out. But I think the one thing that I think when we had the big three, what I really appreciated about Coach Spo, and I thought his the best thing he did with us, is he always kept us in the moment. You know, even when we was on our 27-game win streak, or even when we lost five in a row, he always kept us in the next thing, the next day. Hey, this is what we got to do. This is what we got to do. It was never, he never let us feel ourselves. And I know he did it with us. And I know he's doing it with them. You know, it's about what's next. You know, it's never about, like he always said, and this one quote I take from, you're never as good as you think you are. You're never as bad as you, as they say you are. And I, this team has proved it. The Miami Heat now have proved that, but I really believe that. You know, it's, this game is a game of inches and things can change so fast.
To me, it's always been fascinating with Eric that to replace Pat the way he did and to have his own identity and to not just be, he had to come and the presence that he had as the head coach and with Pat still looming, even in your first year with the big three when you were around 500 and everyone was waiting for Pat to come down and coach the team. I was told Eric really was fearless. David Fizdale and I were talking about this on a podcast. That there was a fearlessness about that group of we're not afraid to get fired. We're going to coach this team hard. We're not going to look over our shoulders. Mm-hmm. And if we go down, we're going down swinging. And what do you remember about Eric? Because that was sort of the moment of truth for Eric as a head coach, that stretch there. And then he came out the other side of it.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned someone who's very important in that, David Fizdale. You know, first of all, him and Spo are best friends. And to have his best friend, to have somebody who knows the game just as well as him and as well as so many in this game right there by his side, I think that gave him that even more confidence. He wasn't by himself. You know, he had his best friend right there with him and they came up with their own, listen, we're going to do it our way. And if our way don't work, hey, we did it our way. And, you know, you can respect that. You know, you can respect and that. I don't think as players, we realize how probably tough it was on him. To be, you know, we at some of our games and people hadn't holding signs up or people chanting, we run Riley. That has to be tough. You know, we just got together. We're just trying to figure this thing out. We're 9 games in and people are already trying to get him out of there. So, you know, I think that, you know, I think what he's been able to accomplish in his short career so far as a head coach, it's just been remarkable. And I don't think a lot of people give him the credit that he deserves, but at the end of the day, he doesn't look for that. That's not why he does this. And, you know, he's one of the great coaches in this game. And, you know, it all started from him just being, you know, so stubborn to who he is and what they wanted to do. You know, him, Coach Fizdale, and all the other guys. And look at Coach Fizdale. You know, look what he's went off in Memphis and done. I mean, just a great group of guys, great coaches. And you can see it. You can see it now.
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj.
D-Wade, we'll get back to our conversation in a minute. But I've got to ask my listeners a question. If you could get 3 home-cooked meals for free, would you sign up for it? Well, of course you would. So all you have to do is remember my name, Woj. Simple enough. Now keep listening, and I'll tell you about those free meals. We all know that there's nothing better than a great home-cooked meal, and no one makes it easier for you to do that than Blue Apron. Their mission is to make incredible home-cooking accessible to everyone. Blue Apron knows that when you cook with incredible ingredients, you make incredible meals. So they set the highest quality standards for their suppliers and only bring you the best ingredients, all of it, right to your doorstep. Plus, each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients and can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. Which means this, even a fool like me can put together these great Blue Apron meals. It's all there. It's all provided for you, and it tastes great. Check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free along with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/Woj, W-O-J. Think about that. That's three meals free just by typing in my name. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Now let's get back to our guest, Dwayne Wade. You mentioned you and Eric were really strong at the end, the last 2 years of Miami. How much of that was when LeBron left and then Chris Bosh had to deal with what Chris has had to deal with, where you two needed each other maybe more than you ever needed each other? Was that part of it?
Yeah. I mean, I think strongest years was probably the first 2 years before the big three and then the last two, you know, after. The first 2 years when he just started coaching and I was, you know, one of the best players in the game and, you know, he had to ride me a lot of nights and, you know, we communicated a lot. We talked a lot. We depended on each other. And the same thing at the end, you know, losing LeBron, you know, losing Chris, unexpectedly. I mean, that was tough. And the only way we was going to have any kind of success was me and him had to be see eye to eye. We had to be on the same page. And, I thought our communication, his communication continued to grow. That was the one thing that, you know, it's tough. Especially with Spo, he's not like over the top kind of guy. He's not a guy who's going to go out and talk to everybody. He got to really trust you and you got to get to know him before he opens up and really, feel comfortable communicating with you so much. And I think, you know, it finally got to the point where our communication just went to another level.
Were you in a tough spot when the big three came together, when LeBron came in, Chris came in, where here you are, you've got to have this loyalty and connection and bond with your teammates, and you've got to build that. And sometimes in doing that, it's players versus coach or it's players versus management, not necessarily in an adversarial way, but there's stretches where that's sort of what gets, you know, you're not seeing eye to eye and there's friction and you're trying to find common ground. Were you in a tougher spot because you had been there and you were Spo's guy and you, and then these guys come in and they're trying to figure out how to exist in this very different culture, especially for LeBron. Were you caught in between for a while at that time of trying to figure out how do I walk both lines with my coach who I've been with forever and with, you know, maybe LeBron who's, this is a very different environment than he had ever been used to?
Yeah, you know, I never even thought about it that way. I mean, you put it so great for me. Yeah, I mean, you know, it was kind of like, I kind of knew Spo's strength and I knew his weaknesses and I thought he knew mine, but I also had to allow LeBron and Chris to learn him and he had to coach them a certain way and they had to feel him out. He had to feel them out. So I didn't want to be the middle guy in between it. You know, I didn't want to be going back and say, hey, coach, they do this. Hey, LeBron. I didn't want to be that. I wanted everyone to have their own relationship with each other. And it took time for everyone to feel comfortable enough with each other. So it was at times where I would step in. There was at times where I would step out and just allow it to happen. And, so, you know, you're trying to figure it out on the fly. You know, I never was in that position before. And when Bron and Chris got there, it was like I was in a different leadership position than I've ever been in. So.
The microscope that group was under, we can talk about this Warrior team now. We could talk about LeBron's first year back in Cleveland. I don't think there's ever been a year in the NBA like 2010, 2011. Do you?
No. Not even close. Not even close. Like, so I was doing my Twitter questions on the way here, and somebody asked me about that first time we went back to Cleveland. I said it was a movie. It would never be nothing like that in basketball ever again. Not that. That was insane.
It was the most vicious. I've never seen an atmosphere, it was like the Roman Coliseum where they, like, it
yes.
was, right?
Yes. It was, I seen for the first time in my life, I seen hatred.
Yeah.
It from a look. Like, I've really felt that people hated me, or, you know what I mean? Like, all of us, they hated. The smell in the arena, the atmosphere, it just breed hate. And it was like, at the end of the day, it was like, wait a minute, guys, like, this is a basketball. We're playing basketball. You know, and I didn't understand Believe Land and everything they've been through. All I knew is that, you know, one of my best friends decided to come and play with me and let's have fun and let's do this. And we have the right to do that. Just like organizations have the right to remove players. You have the right to go where you want. And I didn't really understand why there was so much hatred, in that city for LeBron or for me or for anybody on our team, but It would never be nothing like that. In a microscope we went under, we kind of set the tone. I always say it's like Allen Iverson. We was like the Allen Iverson of the NBA. You know, we had to go through, you know, people not liking cornrows for guys to wear cornrows. We had to go through tattoos for people to wear a tattoo. Like, you know, we had to be the first ones to do it. And now, you know, other people can take softer hits.
It was the beginning, though, of the players. I mean, here you come to Miami. There's no stronger figure in the NBA than Pat Riley. There's no more bigger than life management force of nature in that position than Pat. And Pat always has had great control. He's had it in Miami. He's had tremendous success.
Yeah.
But the decision your group made to play together, to all take less money, which no matter how owners and the league tries to legislate out super teams, if guys are willing to take less, you can't do it. Right now they've done it. Like, we'll see in the next collective bargaining agreement for, like, Russell Westbrook and Paul George, Chris Paul. Are they going to turn down $200 million deals to go somewhere else? They've made it harder to do, right? So, but it was the beginning of something with you guys that has changed certainly the NBA in a way that the power and the leverage went to the players in a way that I don't think the league has gotten back or may ever get back.
I hope not. You know, I think as players, I mean, and I'm going to give LeBron credit. You know, this is someone who really understands his power in the game, you know, and this has been for a long time, and he's really helped bring players along to understand this. He's really helped pave the way from that. And, you know, I think it goes back to the time where we signed a 3-year deal. You know, I remember it, man. I remember the thing to do was, you know, you was going to sign a 5-year deal and it was like $80 million. It was something right. like that. And that's what you did.
Everybody took the security
of the deal. And I remember getting on the phone with LeBron and I remember him asking me, "Hey, you signed your deal yet?" And I said, "Nah, we're thinking about doing it in a couple of days." And he said, "Hey, think about this." And we sat down with my agent, his agent, me, him, and we talked about it and we talked about what it would look like having the power. Putting your, you know, for me, it was like, hey, Shaq is a little older. I want to make sure that I put the pressure on the Miami Heat to stay competitive as well as I'm a little older. I want to be able to get out a little earlier in this deal. Like, so it was so many different things. And I think that moment right there was the moment where it kind of shifted a little bit.
And Carmelo was the one.
He took the extra year.
Right.
Yeah.
Did he regret? He regretted that after.
I don't know. We never talked about it. We never talked about it. And it was funny because we all, after me and LeBron got off the phone, we reached out to Melo and he had already signed his deal.
Right.
It was already done. And then we reached out to Chris and Chris hasn't signed it yet. And, then Chris wound up signing the same deal. And everyone thought that we had this master plan to play together, but it was more so just guys looking out for each other.
It probably never happens without USA Basketball. If there was no USA Basketball, do you think 2010 happens? Do you think the time you guys had spent together with the Olympic team?
I don't know, you know, because I mean, just to be honest, I mean, it happened because of me and LeBron first.
Yeah.
And our relationship was tight, you know, and, you know, all-star games, you know, being friends, you know, we got drugged early. Like, I go to Cleveland, I go over his house, go to Miami, go to my house. We got drugged for being friends early in it. And I think that was the key thing, was our friendship. And then from there, you know, it became about, you know what, now the Miami Heat came up with this master plan and said, hey, we can get 3 guys. And it was like, whoa, that was a whole nother thing. We weren't even thinking 3. And then it became from there, you know, with, hey, you know, what personality fit, what talent fits. And, you know, Chris was the perfect player for us.
When,
so it just worked.
And Pat was gutting that team. It was the ballsiest move. Only Pat, most GMs would not have the courage to do it because you'd lose your job if it didn't happen. But he gutted the team. He got rid of assets and he created the space and did it at a time where he wasn't positive you guys were going to do it. You were out taking visits that I think in retrospect, everybody said, oh, it was all for show. They were just, but there were other scenarios in play at the time.
Man, look, it was real. You know, we was free agents. And like I said, I did not think that was possible. First of all, I remember being asked a question by Mickey Arison. Before the summer hit, it was like All-Star weekend. And the talk for us was about getting Amari. That's when Amari was on and I really liked Amari. I was like, man, you know, what y'all want to do? And they stayed pat. They didn't make any moves. And they said, and then Mickey asked me a question. He said, what do you think the chances of us getting LeBron?
That was at the trade deadline. Because yeah, I remember Pat was trying deadline. To, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can ask Mickey this. And I said, 0.001%. Like sat in his room just like this and said, I didn't think it was even possible. And that was one of my best friends. So it definitely wasn't the way everybody said, but you know, we can't change everyone's mind.
What happened in New York this week with Charles Oakley? What's gone on between Phil Jackson and Carmelo? And you, your generation, you, Chris, LeBron have all spoken out about that scene with Oakley, which was hard to watch the other night. And, there was a time then when if New York ever had it together, would it have been the place if they had an organization that you guys believed in, an owner that you believed in? I always thought in 2010, New York just never got its act together, right?
Yeah, they wasn't, I think all of us met with them. For me, and I'm sure, you know, other guys have something similar. They just, like you said, they just wasn't prepared. They wasn't ready to take on what we felt to take on what we wanted to do. You know, the city was ready. The market was there. You know, it's New York. But the organization standpoint, we didn't feel like they can handle it, you know, and it's a lot coming to play when you decide this is at this point in our career. This is the prime of our career. This is the meat of it. This decision is going to make or break your career. And we really had to make a decision where it really made sense. And, you know, Miami, the structure was there, you know, for us. And it worked out. But when you talk about markets and cities, you know, Chicago and New York is the biggest that we was, you know, reaching out to. But it was never something that we were serious, that I know I was serious about, you know, when it came down to it.
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj.
Dwayne, sit tight for a minute if you can, so I can tell my listeners about SeatGeek. Now, this is not really the optimum time of the year for me to be buying concert tickets or tickets to games, but certainly buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show that you'd like to go to. And really, none of those other ticket sites seem to want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. And it's pretty neat how they do it, too. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place. So you save time and you never miss a deal. You could even set alerts for upcoming events, and they'll let you know if the ticket prices fall. And even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. And here's something I love about it. You go to different venues, different arenas around the country or even the world, or even one you know pretty well. Being able to see that detailed SeatGeek map to show you the exact view from your seat really is a difference maker for me. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I use it often because it's simple and it works. And best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. They show you the full ticket price from start to finish and never try to trick you with big fees on the checkout page. Now listen closely to this next part because it's real important. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. That's $20 right into your pocket. And to get it, all you've got to do is this. Download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, then enter promo code Woj, W-O-J. SeatGeek will then send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Come on, it does not get any simpler than that. So please support SeatGeek the way they support us here at the Vertical Podcast. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code Woj today. Now back to my guest, Chicago Bulls guard Dwayne Wade. Having Pat, and I think we've seen this now in the league, being the Lakers, the Knicks, the big market teams, there's no advantage in free agency. Players are too smart. Agents know. Guys don't want to sign up with a bad organization. And you've seen the strife you've gone through that's gone on in Chicago, and there's been unrest before you got here. And this year, is your appreciation for how, as difficult as it is with Pat sometimes, as much as you can clash and he's stubborn and there's times you, I'm sure you wish you, I can't wait to get away from them. Is there a different appreciation for it being away from it now?
Definitely. I will be man enough to say I definitely have a little bit more appreciation. I had a lot of appreciation and admiration for that guy, but definitely taking a step out of it, going on the other side, you know, you really try to bring what you learned there to where you at. I mean, LeBron tried to bring it to Cleveland, you know, and the thing in Chicago you try to bring is the culture. You try to bring the accountability. You try to bring, you know, like that's what I want to bring. And it's like, well, that's what, you know, I learned there. And I don't think you do that everywhere. I don't think everywhere someone goes, they try to bring what they left, you know, got from another organization. So what Pat and Mickey and, you know, have been able to establish in Miami has been incredible. And it's some great things about it. And there's some things that's not so, you know, great from the standpoint of, how controlling it could be, you know, at times. And, but from a basketball standpoint, you know, it's phenomenal. It's, you know, just sometimes it's, you know, the personal side come in and, you know, the being a man side come in and, you know, I'm 35, you know, it's, I'm different. My mindset is different. You know, you telling me, you know, certain things, it's not going to fly. I'm a professional. I know what to do and what not to do. So I've always respected it at 9.9. Now I respect it at 9.999. You know, for what they built, and he stayed pat and stayed strict to his guns, and he's been successful because of it. And it's the reason that the Miami Heat organization in the last whatever years, especially when I was there, was successful.
Did you feel like that the discounts you took financially, and I know the average person, they're like, hey, you know, whether you made 22 or 26, come on, what's the average person? I get that. But did the organization take you for granted where it became a point where, well, Dwayne's just going to take less and he should accept it. But you're looking around the league going, but why am I the only guy doing it? Or even in Miami where Chris, you know, he had that max offer from Houston, you know, when LeBron left and Chris gets the max deal there. You signed a shorter deal. But looking back, did you feel like you gave up more than you should have, or do you accept how all those negotiations played out?
I definitely don't accept how they all played out. You know, do I feel, you know, at times I did, you know, give back to be on a competitive team to win a championship? Yeah, we did that. But do I feel also that, you know, same way that I've done certain things, I felt that, you know, they should have. You know, the year when Brian left and, you know, signed Chris to that max deal, I'm happy for Chris. He's one of my best friends. I'm right. Like, yeah, okay. You know, my turn, that hurt me, you know, and I've spoken this to Pat, that really hurt me because, you know, at that moment, that was the first moment where I felt like I was being taken for granted. And, you know, so then I signed a shorter deal. And then the next year, Gorman comes in and they max Gorman out. Same thing, 1 year deal. And then this year it came down to a sign. And my thing is all these players, you know, they deserve the money they got. It's not my grift is never with any of them. Right. You know, I love all those guys, but you know, I'm sitting over here waving my hand saying, hey guys, I understand we keep talking, you know, everyone's talking is, oh, the future. My future is running out. And you know, I'm still a good player in this league. Like I'm not asking for something that I don't think I deserve from the standpoint of, you know, of what I can do on a basketball floor. So, you know, it just came down to me where, yeah, you know, did my feelings get hurt some? Yeah. But at the end of the day, you got to make what's best decision for you.
The offer that they made this summer at the time, and you hadn't talked to Pat through negotiations, through free agency, did you feel like they're offering just enough for me to walk away, that they're making the offer? Are they daring me to walk away, or are they convinced I'll never leave? Which is it?
I mean, you know what? I guess looking at it now, I guess it can be a combination of it all. When you're sitting there, you're sitting there and you're thinking about making a decision. I mean, that was a tough decision to make for me. And I had a lot of lonely nights just in the bed thinking about it, you know. And so everything crosses your mind, you know, every scenario. You wake up one day, you like, I'm not gonna take this. Then you wake up another day, like, you know what, it's okay. You know, so you go through so many emotions. But, you know, I did feel that, you know, at the end of the day, it's Mickey Arison's team, but it's Pat. This is Pat's show. And, you know, no matter if someone said, Pat, don't call Dwayne, whatever the case may be, whatever came out and said, that's not Pat. Pat, no, I didn't. That's my guy. I love Pat. And, you know, I know he loves me. And, the fact that we didn't talk, that hurt, you know, and that was my deciding factor when it came down to the end of the day. And he didn't show that he wanted me there. It wasn't about the Harrison family. I know they love me. I know they wanted me there. I know Spo wanted me there. I know Udonis and those guys, but at the end of the day, I didn't hear from the guy I needed to. And I expressed to him, I expressed this to him later. And that right there hurt me, you know, and it showed me that it at this time, I guess it was time for me to, you know, to remove myself from the situation. And whether it was, you know, the thing for the organization to do, whether they tried to do it, whether they didn't, who knows, who cares. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's a business, but I'm human as well. And, you know, I was waiting for him to step up and meet me somewhere, call me, do something. And it just never happened. And that's not Pat. That's right. Not the Pat I know.
Right.
So,
you know, and it's never an accident. It's always, you know, there's a lot of thought that's gone into whether he's
when it comes
up
with that guy. He's a visa thinker, so right. I know that. And then it's me, you know. It's like, you know, it's someone who's been around forever in the organization. So, you know, you can find me, you know, quicker than anybody. And you know, and it just wasn't there, you know. And it's just the thing, you want to be wanted. Simple as that. Everyone wants to be wanted, you know. If you married somebody for a long time, your wife still wants to be wanted, you know, and vice versa. And I didn't feel like I was wanted from the person that I wanted to be wanted from.
Is the hard part now, Dwayne, at this point in your career, you have a player option on your deal. So 2 years, $47.5 million. Mm-hmm. If you want to be on a great team and compete for championships, you are probably going to have to make a decision to take significantly less money. But you've also, like, there's part of you probably going, I'm going to make up for a little bit of lost time these last few years, and I'm going to maximize my earnings while I can do that. Is that something you have to grapple with here at 35, 36, 37? Because you'll probably be on shorter deals here the rest of the way.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely what you got to go in your mind. You got to make this process. And I've thought that I've always sat down and thought everything through that I've done. Not saying that I've done everything right, but I've thought everything through. And it would be the same thing this summer. You know, it's, you know, I didn't sign a long deal with Chicago because they wanted the flexibility just like I did. And, you know, I would have to sit down and decide I'm going to opt in or I'm not. And I would have to sit down and weigh the pros and the cons of doing both. And, you know, and live with whatever decision that I make. But I would do what I do every year. I would sit down with my wife and I would sit down with my team at CA, my agency, and make the best decision, you know, for, you know, where my career is going and where my career is at and organization and what organization is, et cetera. So, yeah.
If the basketball side of it isn't exactly what you want or doesn't meet your standard of whether it's you're willing to invest what you invest in to play, is being home in Chicago enough to offset that? Or, hey, I did the homecoming. I came home. I experienced it. And I've got to look at what else is out there now.
You know what? It could be enough. Yeah, I mean, and it's more so not even looking at it from my standpoint. It's more so my kids. You know, I think my kids are really enjoying being back home, being back with my family, and they're playing high school basketball. And, you know, it's the tough thing is when you have a family, when you have kids, you know, it's moving them around a lot. You know, this was a tough move for my kids, and now I see them really, you know, kind of developing into themselves, and is in Chicago right now. And so, yeah, I have to sit down and think about that too. You know, so it is enough. The Chicago part of it is enough for me, but it's not the only part. You know, it's another part to say it's a money part and it's a winning part. You know, and you got to sit down with all three of those things: family, money, winning, and figure out, you know, what are the stack them up and see what's the most important, you know, when you make your decision.
The impact, you come back to Chicago at a time where the city, I mean, it's beyond a crisis of what's going on, and you grew up in it and you're seeing it in the city and you've wanted to be a part and you've played a role in that of trying to have an impact on the community, on young people, on the violence that goes on every day. What has that meant to you to sort of be back? To be back there and to kind of immerse yourself back into that world and feel like, is there something bigger going on here than just my career that kind of got me, brought me back at this time and place?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely been great from the standpoint. I think the way that the kids in Chicago look at me different now. You know, the way their eyes look up at me is just different. Now that I'm back home and I'm playing for their favorite team. I mean, it's really a glimmer of hope. you know, and it's like they're looking for you to give them something, give them the blueprint, give them, you know, a word. And, you know, so it's been impactful. It's been powerful. And, you know, what, you know, me, my family and our foundation, what we're going to try to continue to do. You know, I think it's some good things in the city. And it's, you know, it's just all about, you know, giving our youth that, you know, that feeling that they can succeed, you know, and shedding some, you know, I have this program right now called Spotlight On. And the Bulls has been phenomenal with allowing me to do it the days of the game and, you know, kind of spotlighting the kids on the court and getting 20,000 people to stand up and cheer for them. It's been phenomenal. And, you know, I really wanted to shed a positive light on this community because there's so much negativity out there about Chicago, so much negativity out there that our kids get to see and hear. And once you hear something over and over again, you know, that's what you believe. And, you know, so our job is to now share positive in their life. And so I'm really excited about that and continuing that. And we move into phase two of their program next week when I get back. And so it's been good. It's definitely been good.
Your son's a pretty good high school basketball player.
He's okay. He's okay.
How have you been in the stands as a father at the games?
Well, I'm a fan of basketball first. So if my kids, you know, doing something that's like, that's nice, I'm a fan. I'm a jump up and I'm a cheer. And then when they're not.
But how about when he over dribbles and turns the ball over and they go for a layup the other way, or he, yeah, or he doesn't get down low and a guy drives by? Can you bite your tongue when you're sitting there?
No, you know what? For a period of time, and yeah, then eventually it comes out. It's like, it's really like the anxiety that I have watching my kids. Like my oldest son who is 15 and my nephew who I take care of who's 15, they both play on freshman and sophomore team, and I lose it. It's an out of body experience that I cannot explain. And I used to always look at, like, you know, these parents, these AAU parents and all these shows where you see how crazy the parents are. I'm not that level, but I get it. You know, like, I remember one day me and my wife was shooting in Atlanta, her TV show, and we up till like 6 a.m. on set, and we got to go rush to the airport right away to be at the boys, AAU tournament in Orlando by like 9. It was something crazy. So I'm tired, irritable, or whatever, and we get there, and they just no effort. They ain't giving us nothing. And we like, yo, we came all the way here.
It sounds familiar.
No, yeah, sleep. Like, and that's what, for me, it was real. You know, I'm like, yo, I get it. Like, it's expensive. This hotel y'all staying in is expensive. This, like, eating. Like, I was like, and I'm someone who is well off. So if I'm a parent that, you know, is working just, you know, a normal job, making normal salary, and they kids ain't giving them the effort, I get it. So, but it's been fun, man. I am enjoying, like, seeing, you know, my boys do things that they love to do. And basketball is one of the things that my oldest son and my nephew love to do. And it's just cool being able to experience it. But it's something there. Hopefully we get to see it over the next couple of years. But the kid got something.
What's it like, though, as a father when they come into a new gym? Anywhere they go, they're, you know, they're just trying to fit in and play and be good players, but people know the name on their back. And I'm sure if a guy scores on your son or your nephew, or if a guy makes a move, their place goes crazy. Or if they, you know, if he misses an open shot that could win the game, is that hard to watch sometimes? Because, hey, he didn't ask for that, right? He didn't ask to be under the scrutiny, but at that age, you signed up for it. You get paid to do it as a pro. What's that like to watch when you've got it as a dad? Because you can't help them. You can't do anything.
No, I love it. I love it. It's going to make or break what, you know. You're going to stop playing basketball and move on to do something else, or it's going to burn you inside so much that you're just going to keep working. You want that not to happen again. So I love it. I love to see when guys go at my son. I, like, you know, sometimes we be together and they will lose a game or some AU, somebody hit on Twitter, just beat Dwayne Wade's son. I'm like, you don't even have a name. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sitting there like, so I'm like that dad that I use certain things as motivational tactics, but I'm also their biggest fan too. You know, like when they see me and my wife jump up, like, it makes them feel good. Cause I'm just not like always on them. Like, you got to do this,
right?
Because you're not me. And, you know, you may be better than me. You may not. I just want you to enjoy the game. I want you to love something. I want you to give your all to something. And if basketball is going to be that, then let's do that. Let's give our all to this. Just like you're going to give your all to trying to date a girl. You know, I want you to give your all to school. I want you to give your all to basketball the same way. And, you know, so for me, it's just cool to be able to kind of, you know, watch this you know, this time. Cause I remember being in high school. I remember, you know, trying to figure things out. And that's where my son's at, my oldest son. He's trying to figure it out, you know, and it's like so many people have expectations of him because of his last name. And I'm just sitting back waiting to see what, you know, what he's going to do and what he's going to become. Is he going to become, you know, greater than me? Is he going to be, is he not going to play basketball at all? It doesn't matter to me. I just want him to put forward the effort. And if he put forth that effort, whatever he does in life, he will be great in.
Along those lines of what you want to be, you're 35 and, you know, you're closer to the end than the beginning. Very few guys have built out the endorsements, the branding. You could spend the rest of your life just being Dwayne Wade. And with your endorsements, you've done a tremendous job with all that. Have you started to think about, do I want to stay in this game? Do I want to go into business? What is there a model for you out there, a post-career model that you look at and say, I kind of like what he's doing or what she's doing?
Well, it's definitely models out there. What I always talk about is Magic from a business standpoint and, you know, all the different things that he's involved in. I love it. You know, he was one of the people that I reached out to when I was like at that point. Like I was like, I think I was roughly like 27, 28. And I was like, okay, I need to start, you know, preparing. And, you know, he was open, let me in, meetings, all these things. And that's what I want to do from that standpoint. I don't want to be a person that just does one thing. You know, I want to be able to do a lot of different things and hopefully be great at them all. But, you know, just, you know, whatever I want to do, I want to be able to try it. And that's what I get to do right now with CEA. They allow so many doors open for me and I just try things and I do things and some succeed. We hit a home run and some we bunt it and some we fly out. But, I do, you know, I'm 35 years old and I'm at the point of my career where I love the game. I definitely love the game. It's certain things that, you know, you hear certain players, especially older players that played before, they say, man, play until they get the jersey off your back. And then, you know, and you, even though you hear that, you don't really understand what they mean because you're still in it, you know? And then, you know, it's another side of it that you like, you know, all right. I have certain standards and, you know, criterias of how I want to play and, you know, do I want to lose? Do I want to win? Like, so you have that. Obviously it's a money component of it. And then it's like, you know what? How selfish I'm going to be to continue to keep doing this and, you know, miss so much time for my family. Like how long? So it's so much that go through, you know, my mind. And, you know, I always tell people I have a number left in my head that I want to play. Is that number going to be right? I don't know. But, you know, I definitely have one but I'm definitely preparing for what's next. I don't know what I want to do. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm definitely preparing for it. And when that time comes, hopefully everything that I'm doing and everything that we've building, you know, is good enough for me just to fall right into it and continue and then grow that like I've grown this.
People have called it, right, the banana boat guys, right?
Banana you, boat crew, yeah. You know,
do you ever imagine when that photo got taken that was going to become the
– No.
Right?
But I did not want to get on the banana boat. I told him, I was like, yo, I do not want to get on that banana boat. And then, you know, we're in the middle of nowhere. I don't even know how the photo was taken. It was nobody out there. It was just us in the middle of the water. It's crazy.
Oh, so that wasn't part of your group, hey, let's take a picture and you put it on Instagram. It was
– Somebody took that picture.
And you feared the possibility of somebody seeing it?
No, I just feared the possibility of being on that banana boat. And I'm like, that doesn't look stable. Like, we're going to fall. and we're going to be in the middle of those. Like, I didn't want to get on it from that standpoint. But we did. You know, it was fun. And then now it's became.
It's like
the thing.
Like,
yeah, right? It's the name of the crew, right? Banana boat crew. It's funny.
There are GMs of teams and people among of that group of guys who think, you know, who trying to figure out guys who are part of that group are going to do in the future who think you guys still are all going to end up playing somewhere at some point together. Do you think part of that is you guys kind of like keeping the mystery and intrigue of that open or is it, well, of course we're going to see if that could happen again. Of course we are.
Well, I think one of it is that LeBron came out and said it. You know, LeBron say something, it becomes, you know, something that everyone going to keep an eye on. And I think it's a little mystery as well, but I think, you know, and then low key is it something that you would like, you know, it's your best friends.
Yeah.
And of course, who wouldn't want to play with their best friends? Now, what it takes to make that happen is a total different story. But, you know, I don't think none of us have shut the door on it, you know, I think, you know, but would it be too late by then? You know, would the game have passed all of us by? Who knows? But you know, it is something to think about, you know, something to put in the back of your mind, but it's not nothing that we focus on either. You know, it's not nothing we, you know, we try to make happen at this point. It's just something that has been talked about. And it's like, well, I wouldn't mind it. You wouldn't mind it. You wouldn't mind it. But it's not nothing that we sat down and said, hey, y'all want to do this? It hasn't got to that point.
It was light when we started talking. It's dark now in Minneapolis. I'll leave you with this, Dwayne. When they look back at your career and think about the way they'll remember you as a teammate, as a leader, there were so many different incarnations of your career. There was, you know, in Miami and, you know, Shaq comes and you guys win the title, but you were the pivotal player on that team. And then you're the one who recruits and sacrifices financially and sacrifices. Hey, Miami was your town and you knew once LeBron came that there was, you know, provisions you had to make because you wanted to win. If they remember you as much for the kind of teammate you were and some of those decisions you made along the way that facilitated winning, do you think it makes your legacy unique, maybe different from some other guys because very few of your generation did what you did? Of any generation.
I think so. I mean, if I can look at anybody that is similar to me, I would say Dr. J, you know, what he had to do, in Philly. But yeah, I think, you know, when people ask me if it's one word that you want to be remembered by, I think of a lot of words, but I just think that I want to be remembered by just someone who was selfless, you know, cared about winning, cared about Didn't really, you know, my ego, you know, Adrian, my ego is not as big as people would expect it to be. You know, the saying, and I think LeBron said that we won the championship. I don't even supposed to be here. I'm just a kid from Akron. Like, Dwayne Wade was not on anyone's radar. You know, what I developed and what I became in Miami was from my, you know, from my heart, from my determination, from an opportunity that I got. And I took the advantage of it. And, you know, God gave me a talent. And, you know, did he give me a talent, which was incredible. But my ego was never big. You know, I was never the chosen one. I was never supposed to be. So I never had an ego. You know, I just was, you know, happy to be on teams. You know, I was happy to, you know, to play with certain guys. And then I became, you know, a big name. But that didn't change, you know, the foundation of who Dwayne Wade was. So for me, it was just always about I play a team sport and nothing gives me more satisfaction than team success. Nothing. I mean, I've had a lot of individual success and it's great, but you're by yourself when you like that. I like the team success. I like being in the middle of the pack because when you're here, you're alone and it's lonely. I like to be with the guys. I like to enjoy, you know, doing it all together. So, I just want to be remembered as just being selfless and just doing it my way. I mean, it's my career. You know, allow me to do it the way I want. And, you know, who cares what, you know, someone else don't like. It's my career. You know, do it my own way.
Dwayne, this was tremendous, man. I really appreciate you taking time out to do this with me.
I appreciate you flying here to this cold city to do this as well.
Glad to do it, man. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Vertical Podcast with Woj. A big thanks to my guest, Dwayne Wade. Remember to subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes wherever you listen to the podcast. And be sure to subscribe to The Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. You can find us on thevertical.com, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play. And you can now hear The Vertical Podcast Network every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, on Sirius Channel 214, XM Channel 203, and on the Sirius XM app on Channel 967. And of course, I'd like to take a moment to thank today's sponsors, SeatGeek and Blue Apron. Be sure to support them the way they support us here at The Vertical Podcast. We'll catch you next time.